The Insurance Banking Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley.
Here.
Vice Chair Fetterhoff.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Driscoll. Fabricio.
Here.
Jill Lombardo. Haig.
Here.
Hans Schofsky.
Here.
Foster.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Rayner is excused. Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Toledo. Zika.
Present.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Before we begin, just a reminder, please silence your electronic devices. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. It's week six. We have two bills on our agenda today, so let's get right to it. Members, we will now take up House Bill 1559, Public Deposits, by Representative Harding. Representative Harding, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, members. This bill makes the following amendments to the Florida Security Deposit, or I'm sorry, amendments to the Florida Security for Public Deposit Act. Makes state chartered and federally chartered credit unions eligible to become qualified public deposits for another qualified public deposit pledged collateral. Provides criteria that a credit union must meet before the CFO can designate a credit union as a qualified public deposit. Creates separate mutual responsibility and contingent liability provisions for credit unions in order to prevent banks from sharing liability with credit unions in the event of a credit union qualified public deposit default. Requires the CFO to segregate and separately account for any collateral proceeds, assessments, or administrative penalties attributable to a credit union from those attributable to any bank, savings bank, or savings association, and that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Representative Maggard, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. As you don't mind, is anybody here from the credit union? I like to ask them some questions.
I believe that there is, and I'm sure they'll speak in public testimony.
Okay, I'll question them then. Thank you.
Okay, any questions of the member on the bill? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none, we're going to public testimony. We've got John Rothel, League of Southern Southeastern Credit Unions and Affiliates. I want to ensure you are recognized.
There we go. Thank you. First of all, I know this is probably the first time you're hearing about any of this, right? So I appreciate going first this morning. But I do want to get one thing straight. Credit unions don't pay taxes. You probably find that odd that I'm going to say that, and I understand all of you already know that. But they don't pay many taxes. The other thing is they do pay a lot of taxes, $26 billion nationally last year. So credit unions are paying taxes, regardless of what you may hear from other people. They don't pay Florida corporate income tax, federal income tax, but they do pay some. So, you know, there's a misnomer out there that credit unions aren't paying taxes, and that doesn't really have anything to do with whether or not they should be able to collect public funds. So there are S-Corps out there that don't pay taxes. They're exempt. They do get to collect public funds. And so regardless of all that, we're talking about the issue here for us is municipalities and public entities that are very small in rural areas who don't have access to a financial institution, a bank, where they can put their funds. So some of them are keeping them in their institution. If they collect them, like a high school, different entities don't have one within 20 miles. So they're having to bank out of the county some point. You'll hear from other people today that they don't have a bank within the county, an entire county. So there are banking deserts in Florida. There are few and far between, but there are places where there aren't financial institutions and the credit unions are coming in. And they are able to provide those services. You know, their credit unions are paying taxes. Their members are paying local taxes. The public entities, fire stations, police departments, high schools. We have credit unions that are in police departments providing services to to the police, fire departments. We have them inside the fire department. They're providing those services, and they're not able to collect those funds and distribute them to the firemen and that they serve. So these entities should be able to take those funds in and use them in the community that they're in. So they, when they bring in deposits, they use them in that community. That's how they provide services and loans from to their members and into the community. The larger institutions, a lot of times, will take those monies in and use them across state lines. They go out of the community. And so the credit unions are about serving their communities. Not to mention, when they deposit these funds, they pay less in fees. If they're doing banking with credit unions, typically they pay less in fees. They're making a better return on their investments and their deposits. And really, it's about where those underbanks and banking deserts occur. So in West Florida and central, South Central Florida and the Big Bend area, you can tell that there are a lot of places where there aren't many institutions. Having said that, are credit unions really able to provide services and give better returns because of a tax exemption? Because they're not paying one tax, is that why they're able to provide better service or lower price services and provide a better return? Or is it because they're not-for-profit cooperative financial institutions that aren't beholden to shareholders? They're not beholden to a paid board that they have to look to for profits. They're not for profit, so that every decision that they make isn't based on how much money is this going to make us, how much are we going to return to our shareholders. But the fact that they're able to return this to their members, to their communities, and serve their communities alike. And next is it going to affect market share in Florida? In other words, are credit unions going to take over the world because they can take public deposits now? And I can assure you, that isn't going to change much. 33 states have this on their books in some form that allow credit unions to bring them in, and we haven't seen an appreciable difference of deposits going to credit unions in those states. So I would submit that that's not going to change a lot. And we understand that there is a looming problem with financial market and market share in Florida and in other states as well. Community banks are fighting for their livelihood. But it's not the credit unions that are the problem. Since 1994, community banks have lost 25% of the market share in Florida. Meanwhile, larger institutions, regional banks and international banks, have gained 23% of that market share. Meanwhile, credit unions over the last 28 years have grown by 2%. So we have a whopping 9% of the market share in Florida. So while you hear that credit unions are buying up credit or community banks and all of this, as you can see in that we have plenty of information that I can get you, it's not credit unions that are taking these institutions over. It's larger banks that are coming in and buying these institutions. So even if credit unions were able to get the full 9% of their market share moving forward of public deposits, that would increase their market share in Florida by less than 0.5%. So they'd be all the way up to 9.5%. Meanwhile, the larger institutions would still be around 73%, 78%. We always say that we don't want Florida to pick winners and losers, and I'd say this outdated law and statute does. It gives banks a monopoly, an unintended monopoly, and credit unions and banks have changed over many years, and the statute needs to change with it. Some credit unions have grown quite a bit over the years, and understandably have incurred significant regulatory burdens as a result. At the end of the day, regardless of their size, They've stayed fast to their mission to serve their communities, serve their members, and provide a community service to low to moderate income families and that segment of the population, charging less for essential banking services that everyone should have access to. Banks have gotten bigger as well. Who would have thought 40 years ago when this law was put in place that today we'd have banks with single bank with assets over $4 trillion? So one financial institution is bigger than every credit union in the country if you add all of their assets up. So I'd urge each of you to keep the money local and vote yes on this great bill, and I'll be happy to, I'm sure, take some questions.
Representative Maggard for questions.
Thank you very much. Is it not true that you do not, that credit unions do not pay corporate income tax, sales tax, community service tax, and non-recurring tangible tax? Is that right?
That is true.
You are recognized. Let's go through the chair, please, this morning. You're recognized.
Yes, sir. That's true.
Okay. So you said in your testimony you don't pay but one tax. There's only one tax you don't pay.
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Sorry, if I misspoke. I meant to say that, yes, they don't pay several taxes.
Question?
You're recognized.
I got several follow-ups here.
You're recognized.
Thank you.
You're the chair.
So for you, in exchange for wanting QFDs, are you willing to pay the same taxes in return that banks have to pay?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd say that would be a pretty robust discussion. However, the way that we're set up is that we're not for profit. So there's many other things besides paying taxes that go into the fact that credit unions don't pay taxes. Just
questions.
You recognize?
Thank you. So is it no? I didn't hear that. I really didn't hear the answer.
I can't give you an answer. We have a board of directors. We have many credit unions that we represent. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. So we'd have to. That would be a discussion for another time.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
Thank you. You made a comment that banks, big banks, can cross lines with money sometimes because of profit because they move into the state. But is it not true that Lake Michigan Credit Union bought Pilot Bank out of Tampa, and they're doing the same thing? Is it not true that Citizens Bank of Florida was just purchased by an outside bank?
Recognize.
Yes, thank you, Chair. That is true. However, no matter where a credit union moves, their mission stays to that local community, regardless of how their size. So even though that they've moved into that area and from an outside, they're still serving that community the same as they would if they were there. Same as a community bank. And I would represent that I'm sure that they're very similar institutions.
Follow up. So what you're saying is, so the Lake Michigan Credit Union, they told their bank they bought here at Pilot, they keep all the money here, send nothing to corporate.
I'm sure they, Mr. Chair, I'm sure they didn't. They didn't say that.
So it does cross. Sorry.
All right. But you're recognized.
It does cross state lines.
You're recognized.
Yes, they're based in Michigan.
Follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you. I noticed in the summary analysis that credit unions have a federal charter and a state charter. Can you explain that, please?
You're recognized.
Well, there's a federal charter that is regulated. There's a state charter that's regulated by the banking regulators in Florida, and the federal charter is regulated by the federal authorities.
Follow up,
please. Follow up.
Thank you. So if Florida, the state of Florida, was to pass a bill that the credit unions did not like, is it true they could just forget the state charter, move to the federal charter, and continue banking?
You're recognized.
I'd have to do some research to let you know on that. However, I'd have to check on that. My apologies for not giving you an answer on that.
Okay. Any other members have questions? Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Okay. We've got Don May, Tallahassee National Bank. I want to show you recognized.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm a 32-year banker in the state of Florida and community banker my entire career, both in rural communities and here in Tallahassee, which is not a big city. This conversation ends if the playing field is level and we're competing against institutions that pay taxes. That's where it ends. The notion of accepting public deposits in an institution that does not pay taxes is really frustrating to us as bankers. We absolutely help our communities. Always have, always will. Regulatory required to, but we do it because it's the right thing. We're involved, local activities. The fact that there are multi-billion dollar credit unions that pay less income taxes than any of you guys do personally. And that's just not the American way to have an uneven playing field like that. But I promise you that community banks absolutely support and are the lifeblood of local communities. Day-to-day, the PPP programs that went on during COVID, the community banks were there. Florida was one of the top in the nation in providing that through the community banks. And we just ask you to please consider keeping the public deposits with the community banks. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for being here today. Sammy Dixon, Prime Meridian Bank.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning, sir. You recognize
members. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a bank that I started 14 years ago here in Tallahassee, Florida. We're less than $1 billion. We pay our taxes. We also have this little thing that if you are all familiar with the Community Redevelopment Act, CRA, we have to, no redlining, deal with all people within the community. Credit unions don't have to comply with that. In addition to not paying taxes, the gentleman said that they paid $26 billion in taxes. That is correct. Payroll taxes. Income taxes of any sort, they don't pay. We compete here in Tallahassee. We have more credit unions per capita in Leon County than we do in the rest of the state. So, yes, I see the competition every single day. We try to be very good stewards of our dollars and taking care of our community each and every day. And as far as credit unions buying banks in the state of Florida, 14 in the last 5 years that they have bought, taking tax dollars off the rolls. So that's what I have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Koss, you have a question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And you may not know the answer to this, and that's okay. I'm curious, do you know how many of the market share of public deposits, what the percentage of community banks holding that market share versus the big banks? Do you know that information?
You're recognized.
I do not off the top of my head. I know we have public deposits both in Leon and Wakulla County, but as far as the overall market share, I could not tell you that.
Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, we've got Kim Davis, Capital City Bank. Morning, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today and provide some facts regarding this proposed legislation. I'll be short, to the point, and hopefully bring a perspective that'll help you in making a decision on this bill. My name's Kim Davis. I'm the Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Capital City Bank. We're headquartered here in Tallahassee, 127 years old. And if I'm honest with you, there are days when I feel like I've been there from the very beginning. We have 57 offices, most of those in North Florida, many of those in small rural communities. Because it's pertinent to my comments today and to this bill, I'll just share with you that our marginal tax rate at Capital City Bank is 25%. And what that means is each and every year, we pay 20 to 25% of our earnings in federal, state, and local taxes. That's a responsibility that you already know the credit unions do not bear. Absent those taxes, we could pay more on our deposits and we could charge less on our loans. In soliciting public funds, credit unions have an unfair competitive advantage in the form of a tax exemption. That also creates, in my opinion, a conflict of interest. The state of Florida grants a tax exemption to one segment of the financial institutions industry, that being the credit unions. If this legislation passes, credit unions could then use this tax advantage to compete with other financial institutions to solicit the state's deposits, which is the very entity that grants them the tax exemption. I have to ask, does anyone else see this as unfair competition and a conflict of interest? This is inequitable, and in its simplest form, the government favoring one competitor over another. The credit unions will try to suggest this bill will open the market to more competition, and more competition is good. I would tell you that your bankers wholeheartedly agree with that statement, as long as all competitors are playing under the same set of rules. As you already know, this is not the case in this situation. Credit unions are profitable. Please do not confuse not-for-profit with profitability. It's a $1.9 trillion industry with over 127 million customers, and in 2020, the revenues exceeded $90 billion. The compound growth rate of the credit union industry far exceeds that of the commercial banking industry. Remember, by not paying taxes, the credit unions are not contributing to the revenues of the state of Florida or the very deposit dollars they would like to solicit. Credit unions, as you heard Mr. Dixon say, are not subject to the Community Reinvestment Act, meaning they can solicit deposit dollars from these communities with no requirement or obligation to reinvest or lend these dollars back to consumers and businesses within those communities. Many of you, I suspect, are business owners. Imagine going to work knowing a major competitor offering the same products and services and pursuing the same clientele has a 20 to 25% pricing advantage. That is what we as bankers are facing. When the playing field has been leveled and the credit unions are paying their fair share, the bankers will welcome them into the field of competition for state deposits. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony today. Okay, up next, we got Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association. Morning, sir. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Harding, for meeting with me, us over the time period. We appreciate it. So why are we here? We're here for the, I used to have a Mardi Gras party, and we used to call it the occasionally annual. So that's kind of how I feel about this bill, the occasionally annual food fight between the bankers and the credit unions. They're seeking to exasperate the unlevel playing field created by Washington over the years. Not a partisan statement. It's just that the tax issue is a Washington issue. And they would like to exasperate that by allowing them to take public deposits, which has been stated, are taxes that are deposited in a bank. And we just find it ironic that they want to take tax dollars they're not paying into the system and then make money off the taxes they're not paying on the system and then not pay taxes on the money they're earning. And as stated, a nonprofit does not mean you don't make profit, because if you don't make a profit, you're going to fail if you're a business, unless you're a true charitable, relying on donations kind of thing. So you've got to make a profit. So it's kind of, that's another red herring. Another red herring is about the big banks. And those of you I've talked to, which I think is most, I forget over the years who I've talked to and not talked to, and I apologize if I haven't spoken to you. The big banks have the vast majority of public deposits. That is absolutely true. The city of Tampa, I don't know where City of St. Pete is, wherever the Miami, Orlando, Orange County, Dade County, they're going to be in the big banks. They're going to go from B of A to Wells Fargo to PNC to whoever. I don't know who it's going to be, but that's who they're going to have, because they have the capital. They can put up the collateral. They have access to what the cities and counties need. So this is about the community banks, and the big banks don't like it, so don't misunderstand me that they like this bill. Because they're competing in the local marketplace as well. They're competing with our community banks, and the community banks don't complain about that, to the most extent, because they're on the same tax. They have what they can compete on. The issue about banking deserts, we went back, and I had Gene in my office go through she's the new person, so she got to do this, go through and do up a list. I told her to take out the three or four biggest banks, and every county has at least one bank. Banking is done, doesn't matter if it's credit unions or banks. This is not the old West where you take the gold into the bank on horseback, excuse me, and you deposit it in the bank. It's all mostly done by electronics. There are courier services. That's all done. To say that there's banking deserts, and in some places there may be banking deserts because the credit unions have bought up the community banks. So they buy it up and go, hey, we're the only ones here. Why not us? So that's kind of an interesting argument. The tax issue we've talked about, and then they've talked about keeping it in state. I can tell you that at least one credit union, besides Lake Michigan, that Representative Maggard pointed out, that bought a bank in Tampa and bought a bank in Naples, two small little towns. They're buying banks everywhere. And that money is going out of state. Another big bank, headquartered in credit union rather, Vistar has 49 contiguous counties that basically go from Tampa straight across and then all the way up the whole state, part of South Georgia, and then the part of the Atlanta metro area. So what they used to say, I don't know if they said it today, so I apologize if they haven't, but they used to say we're locally owned and controlled. Well, if the Lake Michigan Credit Union, the virtually the entire I-75 corridor is locally owned and controlled, then they've met their standard on that. I don't think it is. I don't think you would think it is. These are multi-billion dollar credit unions, $15 billion, $10 billion, $3.5 billion, that are in multiple counties, that are one to do banking. You know, they were formed as cooperatives among groups. Most of them were teachers or military, were a lot of what they were. You formed up as a group. You had to have a local bond. You had to work in the school system, for example, whether you're a custodian, a cafeteria worker, a teacher in administration, or their family. And you could join the credit union. Now with these big ones especially, if you live, work, or worship in a county that has a branch, you can join. So what's the difference between that, a community bank, and Bank of America, for example, one of the biggest banks? When you're in, 49 counties, that's most of Florida, we have 67. One of them, Fairwinds, on their webpage I saw last night, and if I haven't read this right, I wrote this late, and my handwriting is terrible. I could have been a doctor from that standpoint. They serve members throughout the country, and the world. So that's not much of a locally owned. So Representative Costa, your question, I think I kind of answered it. I don't know the exact number, but when you have the biggest cities and the biggest counties are in the biggest banks, that's not going to change. It's going to go from one to the other. That's really a red herring. It's not meaningful because they can't. They won't go to a credit union. I won't say they can't. They probably won't go to a credit union. They probably won't go to a community. Like, they're not going to community banks. I don't think that'll change. And, like has been said, a family of four pays more in taxes. The subchapter S bank they brought up, a couple of things, Mr. Chairman, the only good thing about being this early in the morning and only two bills is I can pontificate a little longer.
Don't press your luck.
I know. I got called up on the other side. I didn't want to do that, so I'm going to make up for it here, I guess. The subchapter S banks, that's where I'm going. I got sidetracked. Yes, they do not pay income tax directly, but their shareholders do. Whether or not they get the dividend, they pay those taxes. They pay sales tax and they pay intangible tax. You've heard from the bankers the competitive edge that the credit unions have. If the credit unions think it won't change much, I don't know why we're seeking this. The only thing we're seeking is to give them more power and make it more attractive to go there. I don't know any business that chases something, sane business, I'm sure somebody's done it, chases product hoping it won't work. I've never heard that before. So we don't fear competition. Family Four pays more in taxes than they do. And I'll take any questions, I guess, unless I can read my handwriting. Oh, just one last thing, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, I heard about PPP loans. Community banks around the country made most of the PPP loans. The FDIC has reported that community banks make over 50% of all small business loans, so they're very important, and this is just another chink away at community banks. It's bad enough. They're under a tremendous stress from the business cycle, from our friends in Washington, and from this would not be helpful. And lastly, and then I'll take questions, Mr. Chairman. I've said that, I think, twice. The only outdated law that, that was spoken about that should be changed, I think, is their tax law. And while that's not necessarily a state issue, this would only encourage them more. And if that goes away, and the only part about this bill I like, Rep, is that it's got a separate pool, and we'd like to keep that. But if they start paying taxes like we do, then go ahead and compete. We don't have a problem with that. But I guess I'll close. I take any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we've got Thomas Flowers, Calhoun, can't read your handwriting, Credit Union. Please state your name for the record, sir, please, since I don't think I got that correct.
Yes, sir. My name is Thomas Flowers. I'm with Calhoun Liberty Credit Union in Bluntstown in Bristol, Florida. It's hard to argue with the bankers. There's not much reason to do that because they're right. Choice is an amazing factor in life. We're all given a choice when someone votes for us or we go to different places. It's a choice people make. The banks could have easily been credit unions as well. That's a choice that they chose to make to be a profit institution. I live in a very rural community just to the west of here. We have one red light in one county, three red lights in the other county. There's not much choice for our elected officials when it comes to public funds. We don't have billion-dollar banks there. No offense, gentlemen, we don't have any community banks there either. So when it's up to public choice, people should have a choice. It's an old, antiquated rule. It's there. We live by it as we go. But giving communities a choice and a purpose, it's tough not to. I don't know why you wouldn't give someone a choice. They talk about there's courier services and things of that nature. There's not in rural communities. There's a lot of times after high school football games and community events, the schools hide the money inside their institutions or inside their buildings just so that it's safe until Monday morning, so they don't send somebody there on the weekend to drive 10, 15, 20 miles to get to a bank to make a deposit. It's a different factor. It's not the same everywhere. Giving people fair choice and an option is an important thing. Sir.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being here. Okay, we got Matt Brockleman, ViStar Credit Union. Good morning, you are recognized.
Good morning, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt Bronfman, ViStar Credit Union, appreciate the shout out from Mr. DeMarco several minutes ago. There are a lot of details that have been shared this morning. I think a lot of them are valid, but I think when you zoom out, we should keep a couple of very important facts in mind. A lot of talk has been had around the tax exemption issue, which we know that's a federal issue. Certainly the credit unions don't think that's a competitive advantage that we have. That's just by nature of our structure, how we're set up. I think it's very interesting that a lot of the narrative this morning has been about how credit unions are somehow the entities in this conversation that have massive unfair advantages, and yet we only have 10% of the state market share of deposits, public and private. So, and you know, imagine if you were sitting here and 10% of the House of Representatives was in control by your party, and the 90% that controlled the House were telling you guys on the floor that you have a huge competitive advantage, although you only have 10% of the membership. So I think that's very interesting. We certainly appreciate having this dialogue this morning and hope to continue it. We ask for your favorable support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Zika, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. And just a quick question. What's your size of your credit union in terms of underlying assets?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. We're about $13 billion in assets, which makes us the 13th largest credit union in the country.
Follow up.
And how many members do you have?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just over 800,000 now. Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Kim Howes, First Commerce Credit Union. Good morning, you are recognized. Good. Put on the microphone, please. Hit that little button there.
There we go. Good morning.
There you go.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you so much for hearing this important legislation. My name is Kim Howells, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer of First Commerce Credit Union, based here locally in Tallahassee. We serve 70,000 members who we are proud trust us with their banking services. And we rise in support of HB 1559. As you've heard, there are big differences in the structure of credit unions versus banks. We are not-for-profit financial cooperatives. We're led by a volunteer board of directors, and we take pride in giving back and focusing on serving our members and our communities. We believe that competition is good. Allowing credit unions to take public deposits will create more choices, and this leads to a better return for our members and for our communities. Most importantly, we serve rural communities and the financially underserved. And again, as opponents of this bill have discussed, they'll talk about the tax issue. But the fact is, we pay a lot of taxes. Payroll taxes, property taxes, just talk to my CFO. In the end, it's the structure that makes us different. And if the banks believe we have an advantage, I'd certainly welcome them to convert their charter to a credit union. There are also limits which tell the whole story about why we are not subject to taxes, and that includes on commercial lending. Credit unions carry the same insurance and regulatory efforts on deposits, regulatory requirements, I'm sorry, as our friends in the commercial banking industry, so we can assure you that these deposits will be safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Do you have a question? Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Howes. I have a question. Do credit unions have the same FDIC protections and requirements? Do they have to meet those same for the deposits they have on hand as banks?
You're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. Our regulatory agency is the NCUA, the National Credit Union Administration, which is exactly the same as the FDIC. It's our counterpart.
Follow up.
Thank you. Do the same limits apply? Are the same numbers for as banks as with credit unions?
You're recognized.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, members, that concludes public testimony. We're now in debate on the bill. Members, any debate on the bill? Representative Hunchowski, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it. And Representative Harding, I know you've been working on this bill. I would just like to make a few comments about the bill. Given the debate we're going to have later today, I found the use of the word choice very ironic in this meeting today. I have a lot of respect for you. And that is the main reason that I will be up on this bill today. But I am incredibly concerned about this constant moving of goalposts that seems to happen in this process. Just as the credit union members said a bank could become a credit union also has the opportunity to become a bank and change. I'm very concerned where we start in one place and everybody makes an agreement, even though that was a long time ago, and now there's this shifting again of the goalposts. And it does feel like then it's shifting the balance and a previously agreed to scenario. So today, and today only, out of respect to my colleague, I will be up on this bill. Thank you.
Okay, members, any further debate? Any further debate? Representative Zika, you're recognized in debate. Sorry, my contact lens got a little foggy here. Representative Zika, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair DeSigley, and thank you, Representative Harding, for the bail. And it's exciting this early in the morning in this room to have all the bankers show up this early. They usually start working around 10 o'clock, but anyway, so.
I was surprised to see you.
Yeah, but I just want to kind of just say a few comments. I'm a banker by trade and banker by training, and I respect both parties here having this dialogue this morning. I know we're having a discussion around deposits, but I believe the underlying discussion is around three different things. It's around tax policy, is around M&A activity, and furthermore is its overall what's the interest of the state to move forward. So as we look at overall, I know we're arguing over deposits. Just for the committee, for the committee's knowledge, banks have been around for a long, long time, and tax policy drives that. So there's something in banking, what we call funding source. Deposits on the balance sheet are known as a liability. Banks utilize deposits to fund loans, and depending on the regulatory body and the percentage, they take a percentage of your deposits and fund the loans you take. So very key driving engine behind the growth of a bank. So you'll see a tremendous amount of fighting back and forth who has deposit market share. When you think of deposits, deposits fall in three different buckets, right? You have your core deposits. That's my checking account, your checking account, your savings account, money market, or whatever that may be, your small business account. You have broker deposits, and you have the third bucket called the public deposits. When you think of a price tag, public deposits are very expensive deposits. So the question is, why would a bank or a credit union, from a business decision, why would they go after public deposits? That is the front of the battle. The underlying battle is the fee income those deposits generate, but wire fees, ACH fees, processing checks, payroll, and a variety of other things, right? So while we're arguing over deposits, there's a huge other battle under there. It's the fee income that comes in. So that's the big question. In my opinion, as a banker and also as a businessman, public deposits are very expensive. It's a gross margin game, right? That's the reason they go after the fees, to improve those margins. The next piece is when it comes to this back and forth, it's the component where the question around the tax policy. The tax policy presently, it's an open-ended policy where you can utilize your tax-exempt status, but you can go from being a $300 million in total assets community credit union in your local community to over $10 billion bank or credit union. A $10 billion and up, it's a whole new slew of regulatory burdens at a federal level that you have to imply, but you have a tremendous amount of capital that you can acquire as many banks as you want to, right? It's a capital game. It's just a business decision. So that's one thing we have to really keep in top of our mind, irrespective of which way this legislation goes as lawmakers. What's the interest of the states to ensure that we have a robust banking market in Florida? And in my opinion, it goes back to the tax policy that we want to implement as a state moving forward in the deposit side. I want to thank the bill sponsor, dear friend, just an amazing guy. I know he is a brother, he's also a banker. So, but I just want, as a committee, to keep that in mind. And as bankers that go back and forth, let's have the conversation from a tax policy perspective. Because banks, Florida is the third largest state of the union, 15th largest economy in the world. Banks do play a key role in generating a tremendous amount of capital in the marketplace, from startup businesses, small businesses, medium-sized businesses. We do have community bank crisis in Florida. Prior to the 08 crisis, there were, I would say, almost 200 community banks in Florida, which they play a critical role in the state. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it's maybe less than 80 community banks in Florida. We do need tax policy to encourage more community banks in Florida, and furthermore, more credit unions that are in that $1 billion or under, where they can continue to play a critical role in our marketplace. So I just want to share some food for thought, some background, as we continue to have this dialogue in the legislature from a policymaker. But it boils down to the tax policy and economic policy to ensure that Florida remains the place to start a business and grow a business and raise a family. Thank you, Chair. Back to you.
Thank you. Representative Maggard in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a simple case of I have the cake and want to eat it too. I heard comments from members that came up today that says they do rural only. They're out for that desert area. And that's actually what the credit union was designed for. Exactly for that. But then you start seeing banks like Midstate, credit unions like Midstate Federal that moves into larger cities and they will pay $60 million to put their name on a rock concert venue. That's not what a credit union was designed for. They were designed for exactly what they were designed to do. And now they are crossing the boundaries and using their tax advantage. I had a chance last night because I couldn't sleep. If you take a community bank that had $1 million in taxable income after taking all the tax deduction credits and alike, they would pay $210,000 in federal income tax, $55,000 in state income tax, for a total of $261,800. That's profit they get to keep. In the banking business, 0.25% means everything. When you start taking profits like that just on $1 million they get, that causes unfair advantage. They were so correct when they said, this is an old bill, this is an old law, it needs to be changed. Exactly right. If they want to be a bank, then they need to pay taxes like a bank, sir, members. And if they don't, then you need to give the same credit to the banks. You can't have both. One way or the other, something's got to give. So, in that case, Joe levied it up, but I just can't be up on the bill.
Representative Hague, in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. Y'all don't fall out of your chairs. I'm actually going to speak. So, Representative Harding, I'm going to eliminate you from this equation because of our relationship. This has nothing to do with the bill sponsor.
Correct.
This is just bad business. I am a common sense business guy who builds houses. Representative Zika, thank you for the banking education. But the reality is if you think for a minute that not for profit doesn't equals profitability, you have to have profitability to run your business. So you can play the not for profit card only so much. There has to be balance in the industry. The playing field needs to be leveled, and it needs to be equal and fair, and then go compete. And Representative Maggard nailed it when he said that credit unions were brought into fruition for a certain reason, and it was to perform what they did years ago. The statute needs to be changed. There's no question. But the statute needs to be changed to make the playing field level and fair. So I'm against the bill, because I believe in a balanced, competitive playing field. So with that, I'm going to vote down today.
Representative Koster in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not going to repeat everything that people far more intelligent on this subject than me have already said. I just want to go on the record and let you know, out of respect for you, I am going to go up on this bill today. But I hope it doesn't keep moving, and if it does, I can't promise you the same vote going forward.
Members, any further debate? Representative Snyder in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know this is a food fight that's been going on since before I got here. And thinking through this bill today, not here to present myself as the middle of the road guy on this, but someone who does use Navy Federal Credit Union in my personal life, my own local community bank, in for my business, it really does come back to this premise of consumer choice, and we all do as business people, we get to make that decision: are we going to be an S corp, a C corp, an LLC? Are we going into the not for profit space, for profit? Are we going to treat our employees as W-2s or contract with 1099s? And you're right, this is a Washington issue. But in Tallahassee, the way the process works is we come through committee. We typically have three committee stops, and this is number one. And I think, to those that, when we talk about statutes that need to be reexamined, well, this is a prime example when we've got banking statutes on the table. I know we're not in questions. I already know the answer, but I'm curious how many amendments were presented to the bill sponsor. And, so with that, I just want to commend
Representative Harding, for your hard work on this. I know everyone has had a seat at the table. And you know, what really hit home to me was the rural banker who typically is from a community credit union representative, from a rural community that typically doesn't have a voice. And I think that's what we're really here to do, is make sure that every member in the state of Florida, every community, every business, every municipality has access to put their funds in a safe, respectable place. And so for those reasons, I'm up and encourage those that do have legitimate concerns, because again, I know this is a complex issue. Please engage with the bill sponsor. Let's hear some amendments at the next stop and see how the process works this out.
Representative Tant, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to tell you, you know I love you. So this is not about you at all. And I do appreciate and love my credit union. I'm actually a credit union member. I am a member of what was, I started out when it was the State Employees Credit Union. And I remember a couple of years ago, I don't remember the precise issues that happened, but I remember when we were having a problem with our school employee payment. And there was a funky tweak in some kind of statute that basically prohibited us from being able to pay our school teachers. And Capital City Bank was able to step in and take care of the problem like that. As a state employee credit union member, I cannot imagine a state employee credit union being able to do the same for the state employee payroll for the state of Florida. Having said that, I do believe that if we're going to look at this, we need to look at this overall. One of the things that I think, you know, I mentioned to you yesterday is if we have a desert, then let's get a tax exemption for our bank or a credit union, or make for being able to serve that desert area. So, I mean, I think we do need a level playing field. I am going to be down on this bill today. I know that this is the start of a conversation that's probably going to be more than one session long, but I can't support this today because I don't think that it is a level playing field, and I think it has to be. So thank you.
Representative Toledo in debate.
I felt if Representative Haig is speaking, I have to speak as well. Representative Harding, I know you've worked very hard on this bill, and I know you see that we have a lot of concerns. We all hate being involved in a food fight, but because I know you will work hard to make the best product come out of this process, I will be up on this bill today, but I hope that we'll see a lot of changes on it.
Ranking Member Wilhite in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I love bills like this because we got a history lesson from Representative Zika. It proved that Representative Haig speaks. It proved that Representative Megger gets hot on this item. And it should have proved to all of us that we don't only have to work banker's hours, because it just turned time that my bank hasn't even opened yet. So we can get work done before banks open. Listen, members, I'm a free market guy. I'm out there for the consumer. Said many of us own business. I don't own a business. I've worked for government my whole life, all right? I'm just a blue-collar worker out there trying to make for my family and my community. But what I will say is, you know, I was with one of the really big banks when they were little. They got bought out. And then I was with the big bank. And what I lost was customer service, the ability for them to communicate with me. It took me months to transfer my stuff out of their bank because I could not get service from them of what I needed. Because I went to a community bank, and we heard from the community banks today. They're the ones that give the community service. They're the ones that are there for people. And I really appreciate that, because I am working with the same person at my community bank that was at the big bank that moved, because I have trust and faith and those employees, because they know me and we have that relationship in our communities. But I will say this too. I've been a member of a credit union for 26 years. I'm still there because the same employee that is there, I still talk to every single time I need an issue to deal with that at credit union. And it comes down to choice here, members. When people are out in the community, when they want to work, I mean, every penny is important to them. And when people want to make sure their money is protected, they're going to go where they get the best value. And the best value is what puts more food on the table or can put more medications in their medicine cabinet for people to have. Because I can tell you, in some of my communities in Century Village, a quarter is a lot of money. But what I don't like is, I don't like not playing on a level playing field. Listen, it was said this year, and unfortunately, the field was a softball field, and the Democrats won. But I like a level playing field, and it should be fair for everybody. And so, although this fight continues to go on in Washington, it shouldn't keep going on here because we should be doing better for our state, for our residents. And I'm going to support this bill because I think we should keep this fight going and we should keep this pressure on because we should give our Floridians the best possible savings and bang for their buck. And I appreciate you bringing this bill forward because I do believe when you bring people to the table, they will have to work harder. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward because I think it's important. It's important to the Floridians and the constituents that we represent to do better for them and to make sure we offer them the best bang for their buck. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Representative Harding, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. And if you didn't have your coffee this morning after hearing this bill, you're welcome. I think you're awake now. Thank you for all the debate. Thanks for the audience members. I think that Representative Wilhite in debate just probably gave the best close you can give. And I do think, you know, as a citizen-led legislator, bills like this is what it's all about. I can tell you, you know, I've got three different institutions I bank with, two community banks and one credit union. I can tell you individually what the strengths and what the weaknesses are. There's a reason that I don't bank only with one community bank, and there's a reason I don't bank only with credit unions, because somewhere in the middle is the balance. Probably the earliest memory I have as a kid is going to a community bank and getting a loan with my dad on a house he was building. I don't remember, I was probably 5 or 6 years old. That community bank is now owned by a much larger bank that still has community in it, but it is a much longer bank. When you go to get a loan now, you don't meet with Mr. Etheridge, you meet with a loan officer that I currently don't know the name of. So what I'm saying is, I probably have probably the middle balance on an issue like this. I probably could speak to that as much as anyone because I live in a rural community. I can tell you that I've watched community banks, small community banks, get bought out. I've watched them get bought out sometimes by larger corporate banks, and I've watched them get bought out by credit unions. I think probably the most important thing that's going to come out of this conversation moving forward is the fact that I want to support those small community banks as they were, and at the same time, I think there's a balance for the credit unions for the intention that why they were started. So I'm asking for you to support the bill because I think moving forward, we have an opportunity to work on this issue, bring attention to this issue. I think we need help, obviously, from Washington on some part of this, potentially, and I think that us talking about it here and making a difference here in Florida is important. I think offering more choice, more dollars into the credit union so that folks can get a car loan. The first car loan I ever had was with the credit union because it was more competitive, and I think that having more dollars in the credit union to be able to pull loans from is, I think the consumer will benefit from that. So, Chairman, with that, I close and ask for your favorable support.
Representative Harding, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Fedehoff?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite? Representatives, Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
No.
Gio Lombardo? Haig?
No.
Hans Schofsky?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Maggard?
No.
Rayner is excused. Smith?
No.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
Chair DeSegli?
Yes.
The bill passes, sir.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 1559 will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Okay, members, we will take up our final bill, House Bill 649, Transfers and Divorce, by Representative Driscoll. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. Thanks for your time in hearing this bill. Under federal law, states may specify assets which are exempt from creditor claims in bankruptcy and may choose to provide greater protection than that is afforded under federal law. Florida law generally provides greater creditor protection to retirement benefits than does Florida law, or than does federal law, and nearly all retirement benefits are protected, including those passing to beneficiaries. Recent bankruptcy court decisions highlighted the need to clarify Florida's exemption when it comes to IRA transfers and divorce. While current Florida law clearly exempts 401k plans from creditors in divorce, the law around IRAs is less precise. So this bill clarifies that IRAs and 401ks are to be treated the same under federal law, under Florida law, and that transfers incident to divorce are exempt from the claims of the transferee's spouse's creditors. And that, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Maggard, you are recognized for a question.
I'm on a roll, so. there's a part of here, because I don't know. That's why I want to ask you a question. I like to learn this. It says, although there's no current controversy in Florida regarding the protection afforded to IRA accounts awarded incident to a divorce, recent bankruptcy court decisions from other jurisdictions may indicate that to clarify such protection under the law. So there's not really a problem, but there might be a problem. But can you explain, so when a husband and wife divorce, the creditors come in to take, I'm lost on the creditor part. Can you help me there?
Sure.
You're recognized.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And great question. And so with the first part of what you're talking about, so there are some federal bankruptcy court decisions that could be persuasive to courts in Florida. So that's why we're concerned. When it comes to bankruptcy law in particular, you find that a lot of the courts will look to what other courts are doing if they're considering a novel issue or if there's not enough case law on the issue. So there's been some recent changes, I want to say, in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals and in those courts where the bankruptcy courts are. And so we're just trying to avoid any situation with that. So if it was a situation where there's been a divorce and the assets change hands and different spouses, one spouse might be awarded, an IRA from their other spouse. The challenge is that transferred retirement benefits, those benefits could be subject to a creditor if we don't clarify this law. We just don't want to leave it up to the courts. We want to make it very clear what Florida law has always been and that those retirement benefits are to be protected.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Koster for a question.
Thank you, Chair. So the other in the Eighth Circuit, for example, was the courts holding that all IRA benefits were not protected from creditors, or was it only once that had been transferred to a former spouse, or what was the holding that we're worried about?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It dealt specifically with IRA benefits that had been transferred, but I might lean on the reptile section if they have any additional information about that. They've been very helpful with me with this bill.
Any further questions? Members, any further questions? Okay, we are on to public testimony. Martha Edenfield, Real Property Probate and Trust Law Section of the Florida Bar. Waiving in support. Thank you for being here this morning. That concludes public testimony. Members, we are in debate. We are in debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Driscoll, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I thank you for this interest, your interest in this bill. We typically don't get any questions at all, so this is very exciting for me today. And Rep. Koster, I'll be happy to follow up with you about those judicial opinions so we can get you further clarity, and I'd ask for your favorable support.
Representative Driscoll, having closed on her bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fedahoff?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Dear Lombardo? Haig?
Yes.
Honschofsky?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Rayner is excused. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tant? Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 649 will be reported favorably. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, we've hit a milestone. This will be the last meeting of our Insurance and Banking Subcommittee, and this is the first meeting where Representative Fabrizio has not introduced 15 bills.
So we appreciate that. Members, I do want to say that it has been, it's really been an incredible honor to lead this subcommittee. I want to thank Speaker Sprouse for this incredible opportunity. I'm sure all chairs feel this way, but the conversations that come from this committee, whether it's during questions, whether it's during debate, is something that you all should be very, very proud of. This is a subcommittee that we've dealt with big issues like property insurance. We've protected our first responders. And then today, you know, we had the luxury of being part of a food fight between the credit union and the bankers. But the work we do in this committee is work that impacts 21 million Floridians, our constituents. And I will tell you that it has been an honor to work with all of you. You should be very, very proud of the work that we've done here in the last 2 years. I know I certainly am. I want to thank the Vice Chair, Representative Federhoff, for her great support. I want to thank Ranking Member Wilhite. He's been a good friend on this committee. We did some good work behind the scenes, and I appreciate his leadership. I'd be totally remiss if I didn't recognize staff. You know, the staff in this committee is just incredibly impressive to me. Ned Luzinski, Meredith, Jen, Susan, Ms. Kimberly, and of course, Kurt, thank you for supporting the members, not only in this committee, but in the entire Florida House of Representatives. You guys really do incredible work. You're incredible people. And again, this is an experience that I will cherish for the rest of my life. So I do appreciate that. So members, if there is no further business, Ranking Member Wilhite for a question.
I think it's not a question because I already owe you $27.
I was trying to get another questions.
20. I know you're trying to get a little more. I wasn't sure if this was our last meeting. I was still hoping there was legs out there and some bills possibly, and you were going to have another meeting. But I do want to thank you for your open and candid conversations. You have always had an open door. You always offered your staff to support and help on anything. You know, listen, I tried to get on this committee my first year, first term, my second term, and I think I maybe regretted my third term because we do deal with a lot of big issues here. And there's a lot of things that go through here, and as you saw today, even on our last meeting, it's still a very large issue that's happening in Florida. So, but with that, I do appreciate that we did try to work on this committee to help a lot of Floridians and do a lot of things. But again, just thank you for your leadership, your staff, and on behalf of myself and our caucus, thank you for the opportunity to serve on this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I appreciate that. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair. It's been a pleasure serving with you, sir. You've done a great job. I know some of these issues can get a little heated at times, and you've done a great job handling these committee meetings. And it's, like I said, it's been a pleasure serving with you, even with Ranking Member Wilhite. At times, he can be a little funny. but I think you did a great job, so thank you so much.
Appreciate that very much. Members, if there is no further business, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Representative Federhoff moves, we rise, and without objection, our meeting is adjourned.